You're listening to Houston Indie Media on 90.1 KPFT.
Because a white man can't even go outside and get a disease. We talk about how like white people can't even go outside into the sunlight without contracting a disease. Like their skin cancer. They got their SP5 3000. You can't even go out into the sunlight. What good is that? Well, they stay in their computer shorts. On their computers. All tan everything, all brown man, sound man, sit down man, sit down man, all brown skin, young melanin.
Here is Dr. David Michael Smith unpacking and explaining Senate Bill 4.
My name is Dr. David Michael Smith, and I'm a member of the Houston Socialist Movement. Senate Bill 4 has got to be one of the worst pieces of legislation in recent Texas history.
Tell us some of the details of SB 4.
It's really just outrageous. I mean, it's hard to believe how bad it can be, but, you know, in Texas, the state legislature and the governor, they're pretty experienced in racist and anti-worker laws. So this bill includes language that sort of like says, show me your papers. What that basically means is that state and local law enforcement officers, even university and college police, will be able to ask about the immigration status of people they detain. So they don't even have to arrest you. They can stop you for a traffic ticket and ask about your immigration status. This bill also requires state and local law enforcement to comply with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement civil detainers, which are basically requests to hold individuals until ICE can pick them up. And there have been several federal courts around the country that have found that if you don't have a warrant, honoring those ICE detainers violates people's Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. But that didn't matter to the state legislature. Senate Bill 4 also prohibits city, county, university, and college officials from adopting any kind of policy or engaging any kind of practice that would, quote, materially limit, end of quote, the authority's investigation of someone's immigration status or reporting that information to other authorities or enforcing federal immigration law. And then finally, as if that's not bad enough, Senate Bill 4 also allows state officials to remove from office any elected or appointed official who prohibits or, again, materially limits enforcement or cooperation with federal immigration officials. And so if you have an uncooperative sheriff or police chief or constable or corrections officer or jail administrator, they could conceivably face Class A misdemeanor charges at fines of $1,000 to $1,500 for the first violation and $25,000 to $25,500 for each subsequent violation. So this bill is chock full of horrific stuff for immigrants, but also for people who are citizens or have legal status who can be racially profiled as well. It's just a horrific bill.
So Houston never was a sanctuary city because the mayor...
No, not really. I mean, to be, the city leaders in Houston have always been reticent or frankly refused to use that language. Even Mayor Turner thinks it's okay to call us a welcoming city, but not a sanctuary city. There's nothing wrong and there's everything right with being a sanctuary city. You know, it was relatively more, how shall we say, friendly or welcoming, to borrow Mayor Turner's terms, in the sense that the HPD, you know, for years now, hasn't rousted people simply about their immigration status, or at least that's the policy. In real life, you know, it's different. But, you know, calling us a sanctuary city for that reason, that's really Republican rhetoric more than anything else. Yet it's revealing that the Democrats, too, have shied away from that term. And even now, although so many people in greater Houston are urging the city to sue the state government over this bill, you don't have that decision yet. You know, down in South Texas, you've got this tiny village called El Cenizo. It's in Webb County. They and Maverick County and LULAC have the first lawsuit in against Senate Bill 4. The El Paso County Commissioner's Court has decided to sue. And then just yesterday, the Austin City Council decided to sue. So I'm asking myself, like lots of other people, it's like, so why don't we do that in Houston? And it's all about bad politics. I mean, I remain hopeful that at some point the Houston city leaders will see their way clear to suing to protect people's rights and to make us genuinely more of a welcoming or sanctuary city. But we'll have to see how that shakes out. And in the meantime, even if they were to sue, I think working class people and oppressed people are right to demand that the HPD not enforce Senate Bill 4. This is anti-worker, it's racist, it just shouldn't be enforced. In the past, HPD has not, by policy, they've not been permitted for years now to inquire about people's immigration status. And that's going to change if the HPD starts enforcing this law. And that's one reason we're doing the demonstration tomorrow. You know, many of us believe that HPD, which has already got its hands dripping in blood from generations of killing and maiming and injuring innocent people, they should not be enforcing this law, because you know it's going to lead to more deportations, more separation of families, but also more racial profiling, more violation of people's legal rights, and a lot of pain and misery.
Even before SB 4 passed, Houston already complied with ICE.
Detainers, yeah. It's a problem because, you know, a lot of us were very happy when Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez, a relatively new sheriff, said he didn't want to cooperate with the program 287G anymore. And so while people were applauding that, sometimes they didn't pay attention to the rest of what he said, which was that they would continue to honor these detainers. I mean, they're just asking for lawsuits and, you know, more pain and suffering among masses of people, but lawsuits and lawsuits. There have been a number of federal courts have said, if you don't have a warrant, you can't hold that individual. And yet Gonzalez wouldn't go the extra mile there. So it's been a problem. It hasn't been perfect in Houston to start with. And now, thanks to Governor Abbott and the Republican majority in the state legislature, it looks like it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Can you tell us what's going on in Austin?
I believe it was by a 10-1 vote. The city council authorized preparation for a lawsuit against Senate Bill 4. You know, it's good that you can have that kind of lawsuit. I'd be curious to see whether people in the streets are demanding that in the meantime, the law not be enforced by their local police authorities. So, but I'm glad to see people in Austin pressuring their elected officials to sue, but I'd say we need to use all the avenues, all the means at our disposal. You know, we need to be able to sue, but we also need to come out and take direct action in the streets and let the politicians and the police know what we feel about this.
So you've already touched on this a lot, but do you have anything to add as far as what actions are being taken to reverse or counter SB4?
Well, there are definitely protests around the state that have been shaping up. It's a good thing to see, whether it's in Austin or El Paso or El Cenizo, for us to get out of the streets. We need more people in the streets. And frankly, we need to move toward a situation in Houston where we can stop business as usual and actually, you know, put some sand in the machine, to borrow a phrase, because we do not need, we absolutely must stop enforcement of Senate Bill 4.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that you want to tell our listeners?
You know, if you're opposed to Senate Bill 4 and you're asking what can you do, every individual makes a difference. Every additional person who comes into the streets to say, no more, we can't stand this, we won't abide this, makes a positive contribution. And if folks would like more information, they're welcome to call 832-692-2306, and we'll be glad to speak with you for sure.
Here is audio from last week's rally in front of the Houston Police Department headquarters, located in downtown Houston.
Chief Acevedo, you remember from earlier today? Acevedo, escucha, estamos en la lucha. Acevedo, escucha, estamos en la lucha.
Acevedo, escucha, estamos en la lucha.
I made it. I think it was 2011, something like 15,000 people. And with a variety of actions that continued over the months, they didn't pass it here. Now, they've already written SB 4 into law, but we can continue to fight and defeat that. How many of y'all are going to stand up and continue to fight every day until you defeat SB 4?
Yeah! El día de hoy estamos aquí muchas organizaciones y varias personas independientes apoyando en contra de la ley SB4 que entrará en efecto el día 1 de septiembre. Pero nosotros los hispanos, todos los inmigrantes de todas las nacionalidades, no vamos a esperar el 1 de septiembre. Tenemos que actuar y vamos a actuar. Tenemos que puchar al jefe de la policía, Acevedo, Ed González, y al mayor, al alcalde de Houston, Sylvester Cano. Tenemos que escucharlo, tenemos que decirle que tenemos un apoyo 100%, no el 50%. Queremos un apoyo que nos sintamos con confianza con la policía. Queremos tener confianza con el alcalde, con la policía. Y ahorita no lo vamos a tener porque no lo están apoyando al 100%. ¿Por qué? Porque necesitamos o necesitan demandar una demanda legal en contra de la ciudad, del estado de Texas, en contra de la SB4. Es la única manera que vamos a nosotros a confiar más, un poco más, a ellos. Cuando se para a un inmigrante sin licencia de conducir, cuando se para por cualquier tráfico, le pueden preguntar si le enseñan con esta ley el estatus migratorio, ¿qué va a pasar? ¿Lo van a arrestar? ¿Va a haber deportaciones masivas? No queremos eso. Tenemos que unirnos. Tenemos que decirle a la policía, a Acevedo, que nos lo confíe y que diga que va a demandar al estado de Texas de una vez por todas. Y tenemos que seguir adelante, unidos para siempre en esta lucha. Muchas gracias a todos.
Houston stands together. I don't care about the governor. I don't care about the mayor. What matters to us is our voice, because our voice makes this city great. We have to stand together. Latinos, todos Latinos, estamos unidos. No teman a la ley que ha sido pasada. Aquí vamos a luchar todos como familia, porque por eso estamos aquí esta tarde.
Here, non-binary person that came with a Muslim upbringing, and who has Latinx family members, it comes close to me in regards to the attacks that people of color and other marginalized people are dealing with right now due to this administration. I just wanted to remind everyone, this stuff is not new, but it's crucial now that more than ever that we remain aware and that we remain cognizant of the laws and rights that we do have left, and that we are, yes, in unity, and that we support each other as a community, and we take care of one another, and we look out for one another. And I just want to say that I love all of you, and I appreciate you for putting out this emotional burden and being here. And it's unfortunate that any of us have to be here talking about these very simplistic rights, but here we are, and it's us that impact the future. And I love you, and take care. I'll take care of you too.
All
right. There you go, Jamie.
I'm not even gonna say my name.
We know who you are.
Thank you. I just prefer to, you know, be identified as Joe Campos Torres' little sister. It's a lot better for me because the light is to be put on him and his story and the issues that we face today on government corruption along with city corruption and police brutality in our own homes. I've been fighting already 40 years. So, yeah, I'm not gonna give up. So, I'm a perfect example for all your new ones or young ones, whoever. I'm 50-something years old already. I've been fighting for 40 years since this happened. So, if I'm not giving up, y'all can't give up. That's to be understandable. That's to be understandable. But one thing we do have in common is the way this system is so screwed up. So screwed up that we the people, as minorities, we the people, period, have no justice. It's no, no such thing as justice for all. There's no such thing as justice for all.
This is also applicable to Latinos, Asians, and Blacks, even though you're an immigrant. You know, I speak for myself as a Thai American. I'm saying here, those who've been victimized by systemic racism, it is not acceptable. This is 2017. I put this hashtag on Facebook a lot. In New York City, Asian Americans have been shouted at. Some people say the word go back to China, anti-Asian racial slurs. I've been reading this on New York Times for months. And it happened to me down in Galveston as a tourist. I've been facing it for 8 years. What I want to say here is that I oppose SB4, what it stands for.
Anybody else want to speak?
Going once, going twice.
I do.
Come on.
As an educator and as a counselor who works with children, I've worked with children for 25 years. I've worked with children who were so afraid their parents were going to be deported that they could not come to school and concentrate on their schoolwork. They were crying and they were fearful. What if their mom got stopped on the way to pick them up because she didn't have a license, or the car wasn't registered, or the taillight was broken? What if she would never see her mother again? Well, you know what? This is bullshit, and I don't ever want another child ever to feel that way again. This is why we're out here. This is what we're going to do until this shit ends. That's it.
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
Shut it down!
Shut it down!
Shut it down!
Shut it down!
Is something going on in the ether?
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This week in Radical History, for March 23, 1842, Congressman Giddings of Ohio is censured by the House Representatives for introducing resolution opposing slavery and coastal slave trade. The Gag Rule, first adopted by a South-dominated Congress in 1836, pledges every member not to mention slavery issue on the floor of the House. Let freedom ring.
On this day, March 23rd, in 1889, U.S. President Benjamin Harrison declared that in 1 month's time, on April 22nd, vast amounts of land in the Oklahoma Territory would be open for settlers to claim homesteads upon. Oklahoma was initially set aside as a destination for Native Americans who were forcibly evicted or coerced from their ancestral lands east of the Mississippi. The opening of Oklahoma created what was called a land rush as prospective homesteaders stampeded across the state line at the prescribed hour.
Also March 23, 1967, in Bolivia, Che Guevara's guerrilla group experienced its first battle of the Bolivian campaign. The U.S.-backed Bolivian president appeals to the nation to, quote, join the fight against the foreign and local anarchists with arms and money from Castro's communists, unquote. Also in 1970, President Nixon declares a national emergency, orders 30,000 troops to New York City to break the postal wildcat strike.
In 1982, a coup occurred in Guatemala, replacing the democratically elected president with a military commander, Efren Rios Montt. Montt was a graduate of the U.S. Military Terrorist Training School facility called the School of the Americas in Columbus, Georgia. And like scores of other graduates of that fine institution, Montt waged a campaign of assassinations and torture against his opposition and labor leaders in Guatemala. He especially targeted Guatemala's Mayan population, and according to a UN report, Montt was responsible for the killing of more than 10,000 Guatemalans and the destruction of some 600 villages. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, March 23rd. This day in history is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
Proving once again that America was not founded on religious freedom but intolerance, as of on this day on March 24th, 1661, Willie Ledra is executed, his crime being a Quaker.
What say you, good people?
Guilty! Guilty!
Also on March 24, 1977, an Argentinian author, Rodolfo Walsh, writes an open letter to the U.S.-backed military junta in regards to its crimes. A day later, the dictatorship assassinates him. His body and some writings will never be seen again. Also on this date in 1978, the Wampanoag claims to land in Cape Cod is dismissed by U.S. District Court in Boston because they had no tribal status in 1869. Tribal status is finally granted to them 9 years later without most of their Cape Cod lands. Also on March 24, 1988 in Israel, after a secret seven-month trial, an employee in a bomb-making factory is convicted of espionage for revealing details of the Israeli atomic weapons program to the London Sunday Times. His revelations show Israel's nuclear capability to the greater extent than experts assumed, and that Israel could build up to 200 atomic bombs as well as neutron and hydrogen bombs. He got 18 years in prison, and 10 years later, in 1998, he's allowed out of solitary confinement for the first time. To this date, Israel still not signed the U.S.-touted nuclear arms agreement forced on other nations, let alone admitting they have nukes at all. More U.S. double standards. Lastly, on this date in 2003, Michael Moore in Hollywood Doghouse, following last night's Academy Awards for denouncing President Bush and his war on the Iraqi people. Moore was roundly booed and jeered by the bulk of Hollywood's finest patriots. Liberal Hollywood? Yeah, right. This week in radical history for March 25th, 1812 in Russia, anarchist sympathizer Alexander Herson lives in Moscow. Journalist, political writer, novelist, influenced by revolution and the French socialism, took an active part in the revolution of 1848 in Paris and Rome, and founded the influential newspaper The Bell in London. Also on March 25th, 1873, Rudolf Rocker lives. American immigrant Rudolf Rocker was an anarcho-syndicalist, theorist, organizer, and anti-fascist. He became deeply involved in the Jewish anarchist movement, author of important works including Nationalism and Culture. Part of the book he describes the emergence and development of religion. Rocker claims religion has enslaved its very creator, man, since man must submit itself to the mysterious powers over which he cannot control. He also implies that this criticism to modern-day politics. According to Nationalism and Culture, man is submitted to an all-powerful state just as he is to an all-powerful God. Thus, Rocker claims, quote, "We arrive at the very foundation of every system of rulership and recognize that all politics in its last instant religion, and that such ties hold the spirit of man in chains of dependence." Rudolf Rocker. Also on this date in 1911, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. The Triangle Shirtwaist Company, occupying the top 10 floors of a building in New York City, is consumed by fire. 147 people, mostly women and young girls, ages between 13 and 23, in working sweatshop conditions, lose their lives. Approximately 50 died as they leaped from windows of the street, and others burned or trampled to death, desperately trying to escape via stairwell's exit, illegally locked to prevent the interruption of work. Company owners are charged with 7 counts of manslaughter, but are found not guilty. A lot more happened in this day in 1916. Ishii dies. He's the last known Native American tribesperson to come out of the wilderness. After his last holdouts of his tribe, his mother and sister ran away from white settler surveyors. He would never see them again. And after a couple of years of loneliness in the California wilderness, he decides to come into a town. For a good book on the life of Ishii, read Ishii in Two Worlds.
Moloch, who entered my soul early. Moloch, in whom I am a consciousness without a body. Moloch, whom I abandon, wake up in Moloch, light streaming out of the sky.
On this date in 1955, Moloch. U.S. Customs confiscate Moloch. 520 copies of Allen Ginsberg's Howl as they enter the U.S. It'll then be published by City Lights Publishers in San Francisco. 1 year later on this date, the government seizes more copies printed at City Lights and charge a publisher with violating obscenity laws. Let freedom ring.
I'm with you in Rockland, where you will split the heavens of Long Island and resurrect your living human Jesus from the superhuman tomb. I'm with you in Rockland, where there are 25,000 mad comrades all together singing the final stanzas of the Internationale. I'm with you in Rockland, where we hug and kiss the United States under our bedsheets. The United States that quaffs all night and won't let us sleep. I'm with you in Rockland, where we wake up electrified out of the coma by our own souls, airplanes roaring over the roof. They've come to drop angelic bombs. The hospital illuminates itself. Imaginary walls collapse. Oh, skinny legions, run outside! Oh, starry-spangled shock of mercy! The eternal war is here! Oh, victory, forget your underwear. We're free. I'm with you in Rockland in my dreams. You walk, dripping from a sea journey on the highway across America in tears to the door of my cottage in the western night.
Lastly, for March 25th, 1965, Martin Luther King Jr. leads 25,000 into Montgomery, completing Civil Rights March begun in Selma. After a week-long struggle against local police, the Civil Rights March ends triumphantly with 50,000 people demonstrating. Martin Luther King would say, "The question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? The nation and world are in dire need of creative extremists."
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, March 26th in 1790, the United States Naturalization Law of 1790 went into effect. This act provided the first guidelines for granting U.S. citizenship. One of these guidelines specified that citizens must be free white people, excluding Native Americans, indentured servants, slaves, free African Americans, and later Asian Americans. It is legislation like this that has historically allowed groups of marginalized white people, such as Irish and Italian Americans, to reap the benefits of whiteness while simultaneously maintaining the oppression of people of color. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also, March 26, 1804, first official notice to Indians from the U.S. government that all Indians must move west of the Mississippi River. Also on this date in 1910, Congress bars pulpers, anarchist criminals, and a disease from the country, with the Immigration Act of 1907 being amended. In 1918, an anarchist draft resister, Philip Grosser, reports from Alcatraz prison that he and opponents of the World War I were being tortured. Meanwhile, Minneapolis is the scene of the first so-called slacker raid, a dragnet of men without draft cards. During World War I, the raid seized more than 4,000 non-registered across the country. On July 15, 1919, the War Department announces that it has classified more than 337,000 American men as draft dodgers. So much for the idea of the Good War. This week in radical history, for March 27, 1814, Massacre at Topeka, the Horseshoe Band. General Andrew Jackson overwhelms Creek forces. To count the dead, white cut off their noses, piling 557 of them, and skin the bodies and tan the hides for souvenirs. Also on March 27, 1909, Wally Nelson, tax resister and nonviolent activist, lives, a Massachusetts farmer and conscientious objector who has refused income tax payments for over 50 years. People, the time has
come. This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, March 27th in 1969, the first National Chicano Youth Liberation Conference was held. This conference gave way to a document called El Plan Espiritual de Aztlán, which laid out the cultural, social, and political ideas and goals of the Chicano movement. The Chicano movement was born from the Mexican-American community who organized and resisted economic slavery, political exploitation, ethnic and cultural psychological destruction, and the denial of civil and human rights. Wouldn't that make you want to fight too? Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away. Say it, say it.
Shout out to Courtney and Rachel and all the other members of the Houston Indie Media Collective, past and present. This is V, signing off and reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media.